Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited to be joined for this special Thanksgiving episode of F This Movie by my best friend, Doug.
Yay! I'm happy to be here, too, and I'm thankful for the friendship that has provided me with this awesome opportunity to talk to you about movies.
I just sprang the idea that this is a Thanksgiving episode on you, so I apologize.
I
but it is
no,
going
it's
to
pages
run.
Pages and pages of notes that I've had to toss out because now you've totally flipped the script and all of a sudden we're talking about Thanksgiving, apparently.
It's going to run the week of Thanksgiving. We're not actually going to be talking about Thanksgiving, but it's
what are we
going to
talk about?
I don't know. Listen, this is just one of those episodes that's like, we're just going to see what happens, you know?
Freeform.
Yeah.
Interpret. We're going to talk about Black Friday.
Yeah. I don't want to box this in. I don't want to label this, okay? Let's not label this.
No, we're not labeling anything.
If you are new to our show, welcome. And this is an interesting show to join us on. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. You can like our page on Facebook, or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Listen to us on Stitcher, or find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. Follow us there. Subscribe to us, I believe, is the word I'm looking for. if you're a fan of the show and you want to leave us a review, that would be great. We always welcome positive reviews. It helps raise the visibility of our show and maybe turn us on to some new listeners. The last time I solicited reviews, I think we were at about 99, and I said, hey, we're at 99 reviews. Somebody leave us number 100. And it, the 100th review is somebody who was very upset about our opinions on Interstellar.
Scathing.
Which will teach me to ever say a negative word about a Christopher Nolan movie. So, in order to offset that terrible feedback, if you do like the show and you want to take a few seconds to leave us a review in iTunes, of course, we very much appreciate it.
Did I ever tell you a story about that guy that left that review about Interstellar?
I can't remember if you did. What's the story on that guy?
I'm pretty sure I told you. I was telling JB or Adam.
Okay.
I told somebody the story. Are you sure it wasn't you?
You know what? For the sake of the podcast, why don't you just tell me that story again?
You know what? Here's the story. Fuck that.
Take that, anonymous person.
Oh, holy shit. I'm an asshole. I apologize. Really, if you left the review, obviously it's your opinion. We value different opinions and different schools of thought. And honestly, I take that back. That sounded pretty harsh. I apologize.
Sure, sure. Well, he was not super nice to us, so it's okay.
It's a joke, is my point. It's get over it.
The thing is,
it's a goof. We're just goofing around.
This isn't Doug. Doug, he's playing a character. That's what you guys got to understand.
It's all just a goof. It's a goof. It's all just a goof.
It's just silly.
Is that the scene from The Ten with Ken Marino talked about it's a goof?
Yeah.
Oh, The Ten. David Wayne's The Ten.
I forgot that that movie existed and that we saw it the weekend it came out. So we're going to talk about random stuff. We have some questions submitted by you, the listeners, that we were actually going to answer the last time we were going to do this show. And then I'm sitting down, I'm getting ready to record, and what happens, Doug?
You're not wearing pants.
No, I'm
you
wearing
need to find pants.
I get a message from Doug, who's all like, bleh. He's like that story that Chunk tells in The Goonies, where he's like,
No, that was pretty much me. No, I feel really badly. I had some 24-hour stomach bug, and I really thought, like, for real, like,
yeah, Doug was suffering from exhaustion, everyone.
At 4 o'clock, I was on some leave. I was, I was in rehab, basically. Let's just say I'm LA Doug. I'm in rehab. I'm at Promises right now, actually, recording this podcast. I really thought I was going to be like, oh, I'll just like, you know, barf and record the podcast. And that did not work
out for me.
I laid in bed. What do they call it in drinking parlance? It's, you got a boot and, what do you call it?
What?
There's an expression when you like frat guys, when they drink, like boot, like you gotta. I can't even. I'm not a frat guy, obviously. Maybe Adam Risky, who was actually in a frat, could elaborate on this. It's like you throw up and then you party. Is like the whole thing. Like you got a boot
and it has the
scoot,
word
boot.
Yeah, I believe
sure
it's scoot
and boogie.
Scoot boot, scoot boogie. I believe is what the frat guys call that.
Here we go, do-si-do. Come on, baby, let's go.
It's like I got a full night of date raping in front of me. I got a boot, scoot, boogie.
These roofies aren't gonna roofie their roofie.
Anyway, so we're going to talk about some random stuff coming up. I'm glad to hear you're feeling better, I guess.
Oh, I feel great.
I didn't mean to seem insensitive there. I'm glad that you're doing okay and that you're back with us. Now you're back in California. Last time you were on the podcast, you were here, right? We talked about Monster Squad, I think.
It was Scary Movie Month. We talked about Monster Squad. I'm pretty sure it was everyone's favorite podcast of the month. That's good. I enjoyed myself.
Before we talk about all the random crap we're going to talk about, Douglas.
I'm also enjoying myself right now, and the video's off, so you can't see me enjoying myself.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen a bunch of stuff lately. Last night I saw Birdman. You've seen Birdman, correct?
I have. It's based on the Soundgarden song, right?
Birdman!
That's the one. That's the one.
If people are wondering, if people are longing for more singing on the podcast, I'm happy to deliver.
See, I thought it was pronounced Birdman.
Birdman. And it's Lester Birdman here.
What did you think of Birdman?
I liked it a lot. I thought Birdman was really, really good.
Oh, you would.
I liked it a lot. I thought that it had a little cinematic masturbation. And that's jokes aside about my earlier comment about
just
pleasuring
regular
myself.
Masturbation, yeah.
Regular masturbation, which is what I'm a fan of. This had cinematic masturbation, which I'm not as big a fan of. I felt like it got had a few false endings and a few masturbatory sort of like, oh, this is going on longer than it should. But overall, I was really entertained by it.
Good.
Have you talked about this before? Have you mentioned this movie before?
I talked about it briefly on last week's podcast.
Okay.
And I think it's symptomatic of the year that I'm having. I don't know if I have changed. And this is going to come up in just a minute when I talk about what I've seen. I don't know if it's that I've changed as a viewer, that my tastes have kind of shifted, or if it just is this crop of movies that I'm having a specific reaction to. But Birdman, I feel like, is a movie that 10 years ago, would have blown my mind. I would have just been like, oh, it's all one take. Can you believe it? And now...
Yeah, but beyond the trickery, it's still, I think it's still an interesting movie that says some interesting things.
I'm very glad that it exists. I'm glad to have seen it. I don't think it's a bad movie. It's just not a movie that I loved, and I had some problems with it, but
it's funny you say that though too, because I remember back in the early 2000s when DVDs were so new and so cheap. If you remember, I think the first 50 DVDs I bought were all a deal somehow. You proof of purchase and with this and that and some coupon at Best Buy, you can get really cheap DVDs. I remember, and you obviously have way more than I do, but just buying everything, especially because at that point, post college or even in college, and then shortly thereafter, when you actually have a disposable income, even though it's very, very modest, you're able to go out and buy 5 movies a week at least of DVDs. And it was all oh yeah, Being John Malkovich and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I'm going to buy everything quasi indie to build my library that was new at that time. And this does feel a little bit like that kind of movie. However, I did still – I'm not – I don't subscribe to – or I don't have the same opinions necessarily that you do. I really did enjoy it, knowing that it's, again, a little too long and a few false endings and a little whatever. I did like some of the philosophical things it had to say. I do – there's a couple great scenes where he first meets Ed Norton in the theater. And they have this wonderful exchange, I feel like, as actors and performers, as performing as actors, performing as actors. And I like the scene where he discusses, he talks to the critic in the bar. This gives nothing away, obviously, but there's
talks to the critic?
Yeah, I like the scene where Michael
Keaton. Oh, I thought that was the worst scene in the movie.
No, I really, really like that scene. I thought it was really, I don't know, I thought it was just such... Just watching them go back and forth and not and having strong opinions about what they're talking about. And again, not wanting to give too much away. I thought that was a really
But the
really
movie shoots
scene.
Itself in the foot by refusing to make the critic a person. It's just
I don't know if I agree with that.
It's just
I mean, yeah, they make
in Uritu complaining about his bad reviews and taking it personally. I feel like Chef from earlier this year had a much more kind of honest dialogue about criticism, and when Favreau finally breaks down and is like, this shit hurts, I thought that was very honest and interesting, and I thought this movie just seemed like somebody with an axe to grind in that scene. But
I can see where you're coming from, but I do think that it's not, and again, she's definitely painted as the villain in the movie, but I feel like if it were more what you're talking about, she would have, how do I put this without giving too much away? He obviously is complaining about critics and who are you and how dare you, blah, blah, blah. This is my life. I'm putting myself out there. I'm sacrificing everything to do this. And she would have, like, if he won, in quotes, that argument, like, she would have, like, kind of backed down, and she didn't. I feel like she was kind of like, whatever. Like, she just kind of rolled her eyes at his big emotive speech that was supposed to change her opinion, and it didn't, you know? And without, again, without giving too much away, there's some of it was changed, but that's not even so much because of his speech, but because of what actually happened in the play.
Yeah.
Like, her actual response to the play. So I don't see it quite as much as that. But I do agree that Chef had a more visceral sort of honest reaction to criticism with John Favreau's speech to the critic.
Yeah.
But again, I think both of those movies actually kind of also present a perspective from the critic saying, like, I put out good food and I'll say it's good food, you know, put out a good play. And obviously with this, she's saying, no matter what, I'm going to shit on
it. And that's my problem, is that, you know, it presents her as having her mind made up no matter what happens. And
right.
That's a little disingenuous, because that's him just saying, like, yeah, people are going to give me a bad, you critic proof your movie, because if somebody doesn't like you, it's because they had decided not to like you. And it's like, it's not my fucking fault. You made Babel, you know?
Or 21 Grams, which I remember sleeping through.
And that's another example. I think, like, when I saw 21 Grams, I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure this is good. Like, they're giving good, interesting performances. Not only have I never wanted to watch 21 Grams again, but it has done nothing but diminish in my estimation since then, and I write it off now as being foolish and young.
I remember a couple scenes, two scenes in particular from 21 Grams that stuck with me, and I think about, and they pop up in my head sometimes, and I think about them often. Let me say this about Birdman 2 real fast. I did, like, aside from one thing, and I won't give this away, one thing was telegraphed very early on and very obviously, a prop and plot device that you know is going to come back up in the end. And that was telegraphed. But aside from that one thing, I didn't quite know where the movie was going to go.
Okay.
And I think that was good to, like, watch it unfold and watch these. And the performances across the board were interesting. And I know you were saying before, too, about, you kind of made a passive-aggressive comment about the Unbroken, like, it's all one shot. But that really is awesome.
No, it's very
impressive.
Technically, it's very well made. It's cool, you know?
Right.
And it's not as distracting as I was afraid it was going to be. I would also argue that it's not quite as immersive as I think it's supposed to be. But whatever. I mean, it's cool. It's well done. A lot of good performances, some really good scenes. I think I had remarked when I talked about it last week that I thought Edward Norton really gave the best performance in the movie. And
could have been you.
And portrays, you know, a very specific kind of douchey actor that I think is also somewhat modeled on himself, or at least him playing with sort of the public's perception of him, of his reputation. But then, you know, gives it a little bit more nuance, and sometimes I wish there was more of that in the movie. Obviously, we can't talk about the ending, which I agree.
Clack, clack, clacking the keyboard right now. I can tell.
No, I'm not. I'm my leg is bouncing, and the cord for my headphone is bouncing up.
I'm sorry.
I'm jittery. This movie gives me nervous energy.
You've also had like 10 cups of Joe.
Well, listen, that's how I podcast, yo.
You've gotta have Joe.
So
I also saw Starry Eyes, which you
reviewed
on the website.
Yes.
And I saw also The Guest, which you also reviewed on the website.
Yes.
The Guest. Let me just put, I know you've talked about this and you've obviously,
no one saw The Guest, by the way, and it's not anyone's fault. It's for whatever reason, they just did not release this movie, and I cannot figure out why. I understand, like, Dan Stevens not a huge star, but this is the kind of movie that could have made him a huge star.
Yeah.
Well, they are putting it out on like VOD, so it'll be on iTunes, I think, early December, so people will finally be able to see what is a really cool movie. But go ahead.
You've obviously written thousands of words on both The Guest and Starry Eyes. Their reviews are on the website. I encourage everyone to read them because they're very, very interesting. And I like to do what I always do. And again, this sounds kind of silly because we're friends and I'm on the website also, but I like to read the review when they're posted, not having seen it. And I like to read them then after I watch the movie itself. So I watched The Guest, and The Guest kind of blew me away. It's so good. And if you're a fan of Your Next, it's great. It's different, obviously, very different, but obviously if you like Adam Wingard's style and Simon Barrett, is that his name?
That is correct.
It's well written, it's well shot, it's different, it's unique, it's gripping, it's funny, it's interesting, it's all the everything you want, I feel like. It's And I think you kind of qualified it as horror, even though it's not, and you even said this, it's not straight horror, obviously. There's horrific elements to it, but right. It's not a horror movie necessarily. And then I saw Starry Eyes, which your take was a lot more mixed in your review. And I don't want to speak for you, but I will. Let me just speak for you right now.
Please do.
I don't want to speak for you except to say this. it stuck with you, even though your first gut reaction to it was kind of like, oh, this is derivative. And some of the things are so telegraphed. So much of the visual stuff with you. Starry Eyes didn't quite work as well as The Guest, but of course that's a really high bar. The Guest was so good and so enjoyable to watch. And I feel like Starry Eyes, and again, maybe it was me. I wasn't quite in the right frame of mind. It's a very dark, ugly movie. I don't mean ugly, like there's just gross things happening and kind of, you know, like just, I can't quite put my finger on what I'm trying to say right now, but it's not a comfortable movie.
No, and, not at all.
So I think my experience watching it is more of like, oh, this is making me, it's unsettling. And I still enjoyed so much of it, specifically Alex Esso's, the lead girl's performance is very, very good. But some other stuff just kind of didn't sit right with me. And again, might be where I was at the time. But I think some things will stick with me. Some things I'll remember. I didn't quite think it was as derivative as you had said. And that's partially probably because I haven't seen or am not as familiar with some of the things it's borrowing from. I know you said before it has borrowed some things from Contracted. I still have yet to see Contracted.
Which I think is coincidental. I don't think it actually borrows from Contracted. Like,
oh, okay.
Because I'm sure they were made around the same time, so I don't think they saw Contracted and said, let's do that. It just so happens that Contracted beat them to the punch, and so then there are certain images and moments in the movie that I'm watching, and I'm like, well, this is so much like Contracted. And as I watched the movie, those things were taking me out of it. I was being distracted by like, yeah, but you kind of telegraphed this, or this is happening and it reminds me of this other thing. But
sure,
I think that movie, more than anything else I've seen this year, has stuck with me. And
really?
I find myself thinking about it more than probably any other movie that I saw this year. And I really want to see it again, because now I want to figure out, like, when I saw it, I liked it, but there were things holding me back. And then ever since then, I've forgotten the things that held me back, and I'm just remembering the things I liked. So I'm wondering what a second viewing would do. Would it tip the scales one way or the other? I mean, I suspect I'll like it more.
Right. You still like it no matter what, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, no. I mean, in the weeks since I saw it, I mean, I saw it probably back in September, and I think I like it more every day, just in my memory.
Sure.
No, I really like it.
I feel like so often, for me at least, movies don't often gain an appreciation in the times, you know, like from the moment I see it until, like, you know, as time passes, I don't usually like think about something more and more and think it's really great. It happens every once in a while. Oftentimes, unfortunately, things kind of loses their estimation or whatever the phrasing is. So it's cool that it's kind of stuck with you. So those are the three things I saw most recently that I wanted to talk about. So what have you seen lately?
Those are good.
And also Birdman.
Oh, right. I just want to real quick point out that Starry Eyes is available right now on iTunes and Amazon.
Yeah,
video on demand and maybe another Vimeo. I don't know. There's all these different platforms, but you should watch it on iTunes because
it's on the Kazaa. It's on the LimeWire.
You should watch it on iTunes because I think that's the one that like studios check and say like, oh, you're number one on the horror chart on iTunes, and that helps everybody involved with the film. So if you're going to watch it, watch it through iTunes.
From everything I hear too, is iTunes is just so bad to the artist. You know, maybe more specifically to music.
Okay.
But like, I'd almost rather watch something on Amazon Prime just because I like their model better.
Sure.
That sounds so silly.
Yeah, I don't know like who's better to the artist, but I don't know. So you should check out Starry Eyes, please. And okay, so I saw, I guess, two movies that I'll talk about. Again, it's the end of the year. I'm trying to catch up on some of the...
You're telling me, brother.
Movies that I've missed. Plus, there's a lot of these movies that are coming out right now. The end of the year sort of Oscar qualifiers all get put out in the last couple months of the year. So I've seen a couple. I finally saw St. Vincent with Bill Murray and Melissa McCarthy and Naomi Watts. And I love Bill Murray. I will always love Bill Murray.
No.
Like... He makes the movie tolerable because he's Bill Murray and he's playing a lovable prick. But I thought the movie was like almost garbage. Like it's not, because it's all put together in that way that like that kind of studio indie Little Miss Sunshine way, sure, where like, oh, they're running in slow motion and he's bonding with a child unexpectedly. That child is melting the ice around his heart. No one is on the Hudson. It takes these turns, and I won't say what they are, that I kind of feel like are for no reason than just to impress us with more perform. Like, you think that's acting? Here comes some more acting, and it does some major things, I guess, to impress us with even greater acting. Because as a story wise, it doesn't make sense. Again, it's the kind of movie that I feel like if I was 17 or 18, I would have responded to, in part because it plays the part very well of being that kind of movie, and in part because I just wouldn't have seen enough stuff at that point that now I've seen so much that I can point to and just be like, oh, this is exactly like all these other shitty, hollow, pretending to be meaningful and or artistic kind of studio indie type. I mean, Little Miss Sunshine is sort of,
Have we talked about Little Miss Sunshine before? I mean, I feel like that's the perfect example of like,
it represents a lot of, yeah. And like, I saw it, you know, when it was out and I think I was like, yeah, no, a lot of that stuff worked. And then like we were saying, it just, as time goes on, I grow more and more, and I've never gone back to revisit it and I probably never have to. I just grow more and more disenchanted with that movie and kind of what it represents, because then that ends up being the indie that Hollywood pats itself on the back for recognizing. Like, see, we like this small movie. It's and like, it's yeah, so your small funny. Movie is filled with fucking movie stars.
I can't define like necessarily what indie means and what major. I mean, obviously we all know what a blockbuster is. We all know what indies should be. But it's this weird middle ground that it's like, oh, it's like 10 A-list celebrities / actors. I mean, if you want to go into like
reducing their rate.
It's like we're going to take a, you know, the standard rate. We're not going to make millions. We believe in this project. And instead of 20th Century Fox, it's Fox Searchlight. So it's still got the backing of like a major studio and still got the backing of major producers and still got like Steve Carell or whomever.
But it shows like, at a festival.
And it's indie in quotes. And it's like, well, that's not really what indie means. Indie means it's like this guy's making this movie. I mean, I'm Kevin Smith obviously has kind of lost a lot of respect in a lot of people's estimation. But you can't deny that Clerks is an indie movie. I mean, he's Desperado, not Desperado, I'm sorry, Mariachi is an indie movie, like a guy selling his fluids to pay for film, to make his movie and to sell it to people, to, you know, that's an indie movie. Like there's he's doing this on his own money, his own budget. And this is just like, oh, we're just gonna get, I mean, how could you not? This movie is, of course, it's gonna be recognized and picked up by the theaters because of these people. And obviously I know there are some examples here and there of movies that you've never heard of starring an actor that, whoa, I'm surprised I haven't heard of this movie before, that kind of like shit the bed, and that's probably because the movie is just a piece of garbage. But this notion that like St. Vincent's an indie movie, it's like Bill Murray's one of the most recognizable faces and names ever. Wait, why is this an indie movie? I don't know.
It's ridiculous. And aside from him, like I understand what maybe drew him to the movie, because obviously it gives him this really big part to play, but it's kind of like Bad Santa, where it's just like, he's an asshole, and then he meets a kid, and he kind of likes the kid, but he's still grouchy with the kid, but then they become friends. So I understand, you know, kind of what drew him to the role.
It's like Bad Words, too, right? That was the
Jason Bateman movie. I understand what drew him to the role, but everybody else, I don't know, I just feel like at a certain point they all should have felt embarrassed to be associated with certain things in the movie. And I won't spoil the climax, but when it gets to where it's going, you just can't believe that anyone is okay with this. Like, as ridiculous as that scene in Little Miss Sunshine is, where everybody's up on stage dancing, there's kind of an absurdity to it that, if memory serves, at least is sort of emotionally cathartic in a way that pays off everything that came before. It's like, it kind of makes sense. I recognize that it's a manufactured moment. That to me is so superior to where St. Vincent goes. The movie was incredibly frustrating.
It's interesting you say that, because that scene in Little Miss Sunshine, and honestly, I had the same reaction to you. I saw it such a long time ago. I haven't seen it since. I remember that scene like cringing, like, oh, this is so It reminds me a little bit of the scene in Love Actually at the end where, like, they – or no, is it About a Boy? That they're
yes,
like,
it's about
there's a performance at the end. It's just like, yeah. Oh, this is
– anytime like, makes, there's, like, a fucking big public display, it's always yeah. rough. And yeah. St. Vincent is no different. So the other movie that I
well, – real quick, St. Yeah, Vincent, no, go I just want to say – it was funny. I got we have a mutual friend named Jennifer.
Yes.
She had texted me, like, a month ago, and she's like, should I see St. Vincent? And quick caveat, our friend Jennifer is a huge live music fan. She sees everything. She lives in New York City. She sees everything. Every weekend she's at a different club seeing musicians and whatnot. She actually has opened my eyes to some cool new artists. And St. Vincent, if you know, is also the name of, I believe her name is Annie Clark, who is St. Vincent, a female, an awesome female artist out there. If you want to check out like some cool female rock music, check out St. Vincent. And actually my wife and I had seen St. Vincent in London 2-3 years ago. So she asked me, should I see St. Vincent? I wrote back. I'm like, yeah, it's great. It's really like, you should totally check out St. Vincent. And then she's like, oh, wow, that's such a strong endorsement. I'm like, I'm surprised you haven't heard of her. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And at the time, like, St. Vincent was such a blip on the movie, was such a blip on my radar because it was like, oh, it's this Bill Murray. It didn't even dawn on me that she was talking about some movie. And that was a little funny thing I wanted to share with
you. So she ended up going to see Terminator Salvation?
I believe she saw Terminator Salvation. And it's really good. You should check it out. It's really, really good.
The other movie that I saw is Foxcatcher. And that is the new movie from Bennett Miller, who made Capote and Moneyball.
I like Moneyball.
I like Moneyball. I'm not the world's biggest Capote fan. Foxcatcher is much more Capote than it is Moneyball.
Okay.
It tells sort of it's the true story. I was not familiar with the story. John LaPont, an eccentric millionaire who wants to...
Patty LuPone's husband.
Who wants to... he's way into, like, Olympic wrestling. And so he gets these two brothers, the Schultz brothers. You
what? Might,
yeah. 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 Can you believe it?
My brother and I are wrestlers?
Correct.
It explains this cauliflower ear.
He is the Macho Man, and you are Leaping Lanny Poffo.
No, Ultimate Lawyer. That's right. I got my JD and ass kicking.
So they are the Schultz brothers, and they are Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo, and so he has them come out to
Elizabeth going.
Foxcatcher Farms. And if you are interested in seeing the movie and you don't already know the story, I would advise you to not read into the story. Because anytime you have a movie that's based on true events, it's very easy to discover spoilers. You just, like, go to somebody's Wikipedia page and you find out what actually happened, and it will kind of ruin the movie. And if you aren't aware at all of where the movie's going, I think it will be a more interesting movie. Here's the thing.
Did you ruin it for yourself?
I knew. Yeah, I knew
okay.
what the story. It is a very well-made movie. It is very deliberately paced. It is slow. It is crushingly sad and lonely. Yeah. The performances are generally good. More on that in a second. And it's just a movie that, again, left me cold. And movie after movie now in the last couple of weeks, whether it's Whiplash or Birdman or Foxcatcher, or there was another one that I saw recently. All these movies that I'm like, yeah, this will maybe be one of my favorite movies of the year. This might be on my top 10. This is getting great reviews. This has people that I like. This is made in a style that I've responded to. This is an interesting subject. All these reasons why I think I should love it. And again, they're all movies that I'm glad I've seen. They're all movies I'm glad exist. And by that, I just mean we're lucky to have movies like this. You know what I mean? Even if I don't love it, like, we're lucky that Foxcatcher exists, because if it didn't, it would be Paul Blart Mall Cop, you know? So those are the choices, by the way. It's this or that. So I'm very glad that these movies are being made, and we live in a time where movies are pretty good, because even if the movies that I'm not loving are Birdman and Foxcatcher and Whiplash, like, we're in a pretty good place.
Sure.
So I wanted to like it more. I think if you can see it in a theater, you should, because I think it will cast more of a spell.
Did you watch it in your screening room?
I watched it as a screener at home, And, you know, it's just different. Watching a movie at home is just different. There are too many distractions. It's too easy to pause it when your wife wants to tell you a story about work that day.
She forgot the magazine at work. I got you. Yeah.
So maybe I need to revisit the movie and do justice to it again. Channing Tatum, very good, you know, continuing to be very good. Mark Ruffalo, very good, playing a character who's just likable. Like, yeah, that's who you get. You get Mark Ruffalo. Steve Carell is one of the problems that I'm having, and he is why the movie's getting a ton of attention, because he transforms. They put a bunch
of... Is he the inspiration for this weekend's weigh-in?
Yeah, he is, absolutely. Okay.
This weekend's weigh-in, by the way, by the time this drops, it'll be way over, but it's what's your favorite against type character, or your favorite actor that's gone against type?
Yeah, some dumb shit like that.
Stupid.
They put a bunch of makeup on him. He does a voice and a walk, and he transforms. And it's the kind of thing that, you know, he'll get nominated for an Oscar for if the movie catches on. If nobody sees the movie, then he won't, because somehow that changes the performance. I never warmed to the performance at all. I never lost sight of the fact that it was makeup and a voice and a walk and a weird impression of a guy. And listen, some of that is the character. Again, without spoiling, we don't really get to know who this character is. And to the film's credit, there is a lot that is very ambiguous in the movie. This is not a movie that holds your hand or spells things out for you. At the same time, that's part of maybe why it's rather emotionally cold. To me, he was playing a character, and I never lost sight of the fact that it was Steve Carell. I never thought he created a person that I believed existing, even though this guy existed. And maybe he's doing a great impression of John LaPont, but at best, I would say it's a good impression of John LaPont. I did not respond to the performance. And, you know, that's the reason the movie's getting a lot of attention. It's one of the reasons the movie's getting a lot of attention.
Steve Carell is such an interesting actor and such an interesting celebrity, because from everything that I've gleaned from watching him in interviews and knowing very little about his personal life, he seems like he's like the nicest, most
like really well-adjusted
drama. Right. Like there's no drama. He's just a generous, a giving actor. Like people that act with him say like he's very like fun to work with and great to work with. And let's be honest, the first, you know, 4 or 5 seasons of The Office are some of the funniest performance like ever. He is so great as Michael Scott. I remember, I think we've talked about this on a podcast years ago, in he had this string of I'm using comedies very loosely, but like Date Night, and there's a couple others. I honestly, Date Night's the one that pops in my head, but where it's just like, well, these are just garbage movies, A, and he is just playing the sad sack mope or moop, B, the moops. I'm sorry, the answer is the moops. And I'm a fan. I say this also as a fan. I'm probably the one person on the entire website who's a big fan of Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. I think his performance actually works in that movie. That movie just speaks to me in some ways I can't defend or whatever, and that's fine. We all like our things. I have not seen this movie, obviously, and I'm really curious because I know he had, like, from what I hear, it's like, oh, Steve Carell's, like, wearing a prosthetic nose, or I don't even know what he's got, the makeup or whatever he has.
Oh, it's a prosthetic nose, all right.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, that seems like it almost – I don't know. I guess people want to be in that – I know you wrote this column this past week about when – comedy actors, I think it was obviously spoke more about Jim Carrey and, but I mean, you've obviously touched on a bunch of comedic actors, be it Eddie Murphy, Jim Carrey, Steve Martin, Adam Sandler, how they are so funny early on and they burn so brightly and then they just make shittier and shittier movies. And eventually they go to dramas and sometimes they can punch their weight. Like obviously Robin Williams, he won an Oscar and he's a good dramatic. And they tap into their dark reservoirs, like you said in your column. Everyone
I don't believe
read
I
used column.
The word reservoirs.
I believe you did. So don't fucking interrupt me. Jesus Christ. but I wonder, like, is this just his, like, the weird natural step of, like, the Hollywood, like, well, I don't want to do Date Night again. Let's do this drama, and let's see if I can get a statue, you know?
And it's an interesting gamble. I mean, I'm glad that they did it, and I know he's a talented actor. I can't even say that he's bad in the part, and maybe it's just my fault that I could never get past the fact that this is Steve Carell in funny makeup. I don't know. You may really like it. You know, sometimes I try to predict things that you would like, and a lot of times I'm way off base.
No. You're pretty much on base. It's just sometimes I don't have this as strong a reaction as you want me to have. You want me on that fence. You need me on that wall.
The movie, it has a very kind of quiet tone and is very much kind of about loneliness and isolation, and sometimes you respond to those kinds of movies, although usually only when it's like the last person alive, not when it's because you're a millionaire on your farm.
Omega Doug is the point. You know, it's funny, I don't know, is that, I don't want to interrupt.
No, I guess that's it. I don't know.
Foxcatcher. I was talking, I saw, full disclosure, I saw Birdman yesterday with JB and Jan's son, who lives in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
His name is Jake, and he is a film student, and he's a smart kid, and he's a good person, and I like to spend time with him because he's funny, and obviously we share a history, and it's, you know, nice to see a movie with him. And it's this is my shout out to JB and Jan. You raised a good kid.
Good job, guys. Good job.
So I saw Birdman with Jake, and it was fun. And we started talking about briefly about performances, and I didn't really get into this too much with him, but I just, the reason I say that is just because that's where I this conversation popped up in my head is in Birdman, it's obviously kind of reflecting Michael Keaton's Batman experience and where he's at now and how he's like a former action star that was in this huge franchise and turned down all this money for a sequel because Tim Burton wasn't part of it, blah, blah, blah. And now he's like trying to be legitimate and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking about there's a moment in the movie where he kind of, I think, makes fun or his alter ego. And that's no spoiler. It's I think it's pretty obvious. Like, he's got some voices in his head, makes fun of Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. And I was thinking about performances and Robert Downey Jr. And then I was thinking about Will Smith. And then I was thinking about other, like Tom Cruise and other types of actors who are very, very famous and very, very good at what they do. And what they do specifically, and I know we've talked about this before briefly, maybe offline, is they are themselves in movies. And obviously there's examples in which they're not just themselves. Like obviously Will Smith, kind of transformed himself for Ali.
For seven pounds.
When he put that jellyfish in that bathtub, he was transformed into a translucent, electrified monster beast. And obviously, Tom Cruise can transform himself. And
I mean, Tropic Thunder, hello.
Robert Downey Jr., I don't know if he's ever really transformed himself to that extent. But
also
for the most
Tropic
part,
Thunder.
For the most part, these actors are famous and we like them so much because they are just in a way, and maybe this is very reductive, they're just a version of themselves
right
on screen. Like, obviously, Robert Downey Jr., is he that different than Tony Stark? I don't know. Obviously, he's not a superhero, but I think it's more Robert Downey Jr. than Tony Stark, the performance that we're seeing, like attitude, the snark, the, you know, the women, all the stuff that we associate with the person. It's like, oh, this just makes sense in this character. How serendipitous that this has happened. And I was thinking about performances, and obviously I just went off the rails. I'm done talking.
You saw Birdman. You guys were talking about performances.
No, I'm just kidding. That was just, I just was kind of trying to lead into something else, just performances and how, is it a good performance? Is Robert Downey Jr., is he doing something special and unique? Is Will Smith doing something? I mean, Will Smith is such a likable, and I say this is not like the biggest Will Smith fan, but he's such, when you see him in something that's fun to watch, be it a Men in Black type movie or something, is he doing a great performance, or is he just so charismatic and so confident?
Yeah,
that we're just blown away.
Well, that's right. That's the thing is, you know, and those people then often get dismissed as actors because it's like, well, he's not an actor. He's just a movie star. But, you know, don't sell short being a movie star because, A, it sells tickets, and B, it's harder than you would think, especially to sort of pick project after project that is right for you and that is going to
your brand.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Jimmy Stewart was a movie star, like, and we love Jimmy Stewart. And it's not that Jimmy Stewart was a bad actor, but Jimmy Stewart was basically Jimmy Stewart in movie after movie, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I guess my point in bringing this up was to, you know, the Steve Carell wanting to transform himself, and we can never kind of disassociate ourselves with like, oh, that's the Steve Carell we know, be it from The Daily Show or be it from The Office or all the different kind of performances, and he's a comedic act. He obviously, his background is in, you know, like Second City, and I don't know if he was IO or Groundlings or whatever, but he has this improv background. He's got all these, and now he wants to transform himself, and it's always hard sometimes to disassociate. And the opposite end of that spectrum, and we've talked about this before also, is the what's his name, the guy from There Will Be Blood and Lincoln. Daniel Day-Lewis. Where he, in every performance, transforms himself. And right. I think Adam Risky commented on this after watching Lincoln, that the guy it just is a humorless kind of, like, I'd rather watch an interesting performance by someone. And it's so manufactured in a weird way from him. And I'm obviously paraphrasing horribly for Mr. Risky, but his beef with Day-Lewis is that it's boring in a way to watch a person transform, and it's this very cold, distant sort of approach to acting, as right. opposed to the warm, you know, like what we're used to more from celebrities. And so I don't know.
Well, and that's sort of why Daniel Day-Lewis is an actor and not a movie star. And Daniel Day-Lewis will not necessarily sell tickets to a movie because the public doesn't have that relationship with him. You know, we go see Robert Downey Jr. in movie after movie because, like, I know him, I know what he does. I feel like I know Robert Downey Jr., the guy, so I'm going to go watch him do his thing for a little while. And, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, every time he shows up in a movie, you're getting somebody different. So you never really have a relationship with the guy, which is fine. I mean, they're just two different ways of operating.
So is it unfair of us to then, like, say, like, I can't disassociate Steve Carell from Steve Carell in Foxcatcher? And I'm, I don't mean to put you on the spot or whatever.
No, because I feel like it's not just...
Is there a performance there that you've done differently?
Okay. Exactly. I think they're in a different situation of the same kind of version of the story. I forget that it's Steve Carell. Maybe. I don't know. And again, part of it is the part that he's playing, because the character is such this weirdo and enigma that it's like, in the absence of not really understanding or knowing anything about this guy, all that's left are his weird affectations, which is what the performance ends up being in a way.
Okay.
I don't know. I wanted to love Foxcatcher. I didn't, but people should still see it. I absolutely still recommend seeing it.
What else comes out this year that's going to be like a, Oscar type? And again, that's such a, we've obviously made it very clear on the website and on podcasts that fuck the Oscars. It's bullshit. Like, who cares? But it is always interesting this end of year, like post summer, like there's the summer blockbusters, there's the doldrums of October, and now it's like the ramp up to the award season bait. So what else comes out that's like really people are looking forward to?
The model has kind of shifted in recent years, so that now December is we're basically in another version of summer. In December, because it's just a lot of kind of big tentpole movies. We get Into the Woods and the new Hobbit movie and the new Hunger Games just came out this weekend, which I meant to talk about. I didn't see it, and I'm in no rush to see it because it is half a movie. And for whatever reason, I've liked those first two Hunger Games movies. You, I know, liked them even more than I did. I like them both. I just am not excited about another one ever, even when Catching Fire came out. I liked the first Hunger Games. Catching Fire came out. I kind of had to drag myself to the theater to see it, and then I liked it. I probably liked it more than the first Hunger Games, and yet now here comes the new one, and I'm just like, if I get a chance, I'll go, especially knowing, like, that's half a movie.
But after the fappening, you want to see it even more, right?
So I know Inherent Vice is still coming, the new Paul
Thomas Anderson. It's so funny you say... You're mentioning some movies, and I know some, but some of them are like, oh, I've either heard about them and forgotten about them, or have not even heard about them.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, there's stuff that's coming out that I'm just oblivious to. And again, maybe that's just the case of me having a kid and being busier than I was, you know, like in 2000
right.
at the end of college. It's like all I did was see everything every weekend. I had no life, no mortgage, no car payments, no kids, no wife, whatever. And it was like, I'm going to see everything. I'm going to see Lake Placid, for crying out loud.
And you made the right choice, because Lake Placid is terrific.
My Oliver Platt go-to line.
From Gunshy, I believe that movie is called. So I want to read a couple of the questions that were tweeted weeks ago when we were going to do the podcast before your tum-tum got
literally I crapped out.
I had solicited some questions from people, and we only got a couple. because I just did it like from my personal Twitter. I probably should have used the F This Movie Twitter, but I'm going to throw some out at you. Are you ready?
Okay. I am. I'm for the record, I've not seen these. I'm not prepared.
Yeah, that's right. The first one comes from Brett Lashaway, who's at Grey Weirdo. What's the best Thanksgiving movie?
Well, it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, right? I mean, there's only a few.
That's the thing, is like, it's almost the only...
Yeah, I feel bad because I remember, again, this. I think I wrote about this in the Netflix, this movie from a couple weeks ago. This is so, you just got to read all the columns, people, on the website. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is on Netflix instant streaming, so you can watch it on Netflix. It's really great. And I was in this like mood, even in California, it's feeling like Thanksgiving. It's feeling like it's cooler. It's, you know, it's got that vibe. And I know.
Do you guys celebrate? Do you celebrate Thanksgiving in California?
It's called something different that you don't find out until you actually move out here. So I won't even, that's by the way, setting a joke up and not having a plane.
Do you guys eat turkey or do you put like pineapple and sprouts?
Duck in with avocado foam actually is what we eat. But I remember writing when I did the dumb trailers column. That was I basically featured 3 to 4 or 5 trailers and wrote a very humorous paragraph after each one. I remember there was one week in November. It was all Thanksgiving. I'm like, oh, I'm going to feature all the Thanksgiving movies. All the Thanksgiving movies equals like 3 movies. There's really not. I mean, there's definitely movies that take place in November, and I think that there's movies out there. I think even like Hannah and Her Sisters has a scene that takes place.
Yeah, there are scenes with like there are movies with a Thanksgiving scene, but very few that sort of revolve around the holiday.
Right, and it comes down to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Home for the Holidays, and The Last of the Mohicans. No, The New World.
Oh yeah, House of Yes.
House of Yes, yeah. You're right.
I'm looking at a list. That's the only reason I know. And
by the way, it's Planes, Trains still. I mean, the movie has its faults. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't quite hold up. It's not the perfect comedy gem that we might think it is, but it's still really, really great. It's two awesome comedic actors, R.I.P. J.C., and it's a John Hughes movie. It takes place in Chicago. That's great. So it's got to be Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, I would probably agree. I'm a fan of The Ice Storm, but that's not really a movie that, like, every November I'm like, oh, yeah, Thanksgiving's coming up. Gotta put on The Ice Storm. Gotta have some key party action. Gotta lose my son. It's a sad, sad, depressing, dark movie. It's terrific, but it's not something that I would put on. Also in the running, Son-in-Law, the Pauly Shore movie. Just kidding, not really. I'll tell you what's not a good Thanksgiving movie, and I bring this up because my children have been watching it, especially my 2-year-old daughter, because she's a real dum-dum and she doesn't know any better. It's this movie called Free Birds, and it came out last year. It's one of these, like, computer...
You're talking about your daughter being dumb.
Well, listen, if she likes Free Birds, she clearly has no critical faculties. She
loves Skinner. Cut her some slack.
It's this computer-generated, computer-animated film from last year about two hilarious talking turkeys voiced by Woody Harrelson and Owen Wilson. So not a small amount of marijuana was smoked when they agreed to voice these characters. Amy Poehler does a voice. So it is a fucking insane movie, and not in a good way. It's this children's cartoon about a turkey, two turkeys who travel back in time to, like, stop Thanksgiving so that no more turkeys are murdered every year. Like, there's a lot about turkey death. By the end, I'm not fucking kidding, every 5 minutes it becomes a new movie. So it's about time travel. It's this wacky talking animal comedy. There's a whole sequence where, like, the turkeys live in the good life and ordering room service and eating pizza. Like, and there's Chuck E. Cheese product placement in a computer animated film. It's very weird. By the end, it's the Matrix where, like, he's the one, and then there's a whole Avatar scene where, like, one of the characters' fathers, like, the elder, I'm guessing he's voiced by, like, Wes Studi or somebody, and he dies and his spirit floats up into Home Tree. It's fucking – it is such a garbage movie.
Sounds like what you're describing is, like, an Adult Swim – like 15-minute long thing. Like, oh my God, turkey's going back in time to stop Thanksgiving. That sounds hilarious. And I'm going to dedicate 15 minutes of this. I'll pause Eric Andre. Yeah.
I wish. This guy, the guy who directed it, was an animator with Pixar and then split off to direct his own movies. He made Horton Hears a Who, and then he was the director of the live-action Jonah Hex, which is, like, notoriously one of the most terrible movies of the last 5 years. It was written by Jimmy Hayward, this director, and Scott Mosier, formerly of Kevin Smith,
Universe?
Yeah, has branched out onto his own and is writing a terrible, terrible children's movie called Free Birds that's all about talking turkeys trying not to be murdered. And it really just feels like they wrote it separately, like they watched every movie on Netflix and then wrote it separately and then threw the pages together and then animated it. And I really didn't like it. This movie makes the movie made over $100 million at the box office.
Listen, I've given my answer, and I've heard your review just now, and I've not seen Free Birds. Can I revise my answer for my favorite?
Yeah.
I think it's Free Birds. I did not see this coming. Thanksgiving movie is Free Birds. No,
wait,
it sounds delicious. It sounds like there's white meat, dark meat, all will be coming.
That, by the way, is the real answer to what is the best
good gravy. Eli Roth needs to stop doing whatever he's doing, like be it a horror museum in Vegas or
raping Lana Del Rey.
Right, he needs to make Thanksgiving an 80s slasher movie and not. And but by the way, I say that also not as a fan of Machete. So
yeah,
I mean,
right.
We don't
actually want that to happen, but
right.
Because that trailer is so great that it probably should just exist.
Right.
Own thing. Are you ready for the next question? Oh, sorry. Oh, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, I'm ready for the next. Thank you, Gray Weirdo, for your bad question.
Okay. This next one comes from Ariel Farachi at Ariel Farachi on Twitter.
If you no relation to Devin, right?
Actually, yes, relation.
Relation to Devin Farachi?
That's correct. If you could have been the writer director of any film, what movie would it have been? Not necessarily your favorite movie, but one you think was made so well you wish you had been a part of it, that you were the creator of something so excellent. This is a fucking heavy question to throw at.
I know. Wait, can you read it? She knows what she's talking about, and my brain is not working right now. Can you? If I was
What movie do you wish you would have made? Like, it doesn't have to be one of your favorites. It's just you see it and you're like, that was so goddamn good. That's so well done.
That's it.
Ferris Bueller. Interesting.
It's like, this is the best movie. This is the perfect movie. I don't know. I haven't, do you have an answer? You've obviously seen this question for weeks because I was all
But guess
chucking.
What? I did not once try to think of an answer until just now. This was a mistake.
You're disappointing.
I could have blown mind. I could have blown your mind with some great answer, and instead I'm just like, we'll get to it when we get to it, and not think of an answer.
For real, though, I'm sticking with my answer because I remember watching as a younger man, probably, again, maybe in high school or college, watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off and really, really enjoying it. I know on our Best Of podcasts, I want to say like around episode 100, we did all the people that were associated with the show at that point did a top five of all time.
That's correct.
Podcast. Is there a better way to say that? I think I kind of butchered that.
No, I think that was
that
exactly
description.
Right.
Well, so at episode 100, it was, or episode 95 to 100, it was all the people like JB, myself, Eric Asperger, all of our top five movies, and finally Patrick's. And one of my top five, which I would probably revise, was Ferris Bueller's. And I think the reason I gave, just to summarize and paraphrase very briefly, was that I like teen movies, I like Chicago movies, that kind of movie hit both those things for me. So I kind of used it as a category movie to fit that requirement for me, but I still think that movie is good, and I love Ferris Bueller's. I love just the vibe. I love like it's the perfect sort of 80s teen movie for me. I know there's a lot of other fans of Breakfast Clubs and what have you, but that movie is one of my favorites of that genre. And I remember watching it, just being like, "Wow, this is just I like the episodic aspect of it. I like how they go from all these different things, and it never feels forced. And it's just this. I like the characters. I like all those things." I remember thinking way back then, and again, not having a better answer right now in my 30s, I'm like, "Oh, it's got to be Ferris Bueller's. I wish I wrote and directed Ferris Bueller's Day Off."
Plus, you love to play hooky. I would revise the list and what comes off and what goes on.
I think Ferris Bueller's goes off.
All right. What replaces it?
Blues Brothers.
For some reason, I thought Blues Brothers was on your list.
No, my memory does not serve, by the way, but I remember my list is Starship Troopers, it is Wet Hot American Summer, it is It's a Wonderful Life, it is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and something else. And that tells you how seriously I take this top five list.
Memphis Belle?
It is not Memphis Belle.
Is it A Few Good Men?
It is not A Few Good Men.
Is it Freebirds?
It is now. So take out, okay, Ariel Faraci, listen very carefully. The movie I wish I wrote and directed is, it's about turkeys. It's about turkeys who want to go back in time. I believe it's
time traveling turkeys. And my daughter, every day, we watch turkey movie. And I want to say, like, it's a shitty movie. Don't you understand?
Don't you have any taste?
Yeah. Like, what the fuck, kid?
Who birthed you?
I'm going to show her Jonah Hex.
Your mother.
I'm going to show her Jonah Hex.
Don't get me started on your mother.
And say, look what this asshole made. You still think Freebirds is good? This fucking guy made Jonah Hex. Watch this movie.
All of a sudden you're doing this wormhole of like just ripping on like your daughter's mother, like your wife, just because how did she make you? What's wrong with
catching all of this Freebirds shrapnel?
Right.
My answer is weird and also incorrect. And here's why. Because I'm not going to answer the question exactly as posed in terms of like, what movie do you see that's so perfect that you wish you had directed it? Because I mean, anything Quentin Tarantino made, you know, and which isn't to say that every one of those is perfect, but it's just like those movies entertain me in a way that no other movie really does, you know, the way that he pulls all these different genres and influences together and the way he combines violence and action and humor and sometimes commentary if it's Inglourious Bastards, sometimes it's just, you know, kind of a fun movie. But I'm going to say Richard Kelly's The Box. And here's why. Because.
What? Are you talking about Box Trolls?
I'm talking about The Box, the movie with James Marsden and Cameron Diaz. It's a feature-length adaptation of, listen to me, of Richard
Matheson's... The Twilight Zone episode?
Yeah, button. You push the button and then somebody dies, but you will, I don't know, get a new wig if you're Cameron Diaz.
It's the Billy Idol song, right?
Button, exactly.
Button. No, David Bowie, sorry.
Yeah, Billy Idol is Moni Moni, which is the other title for this movie. So,
Rebel, Moni Moni. The Box.
When I saw The Box...
By the way, my movie, The Box, very different from your movie, The Box.
When I saw this movie, I think in like 2009... During,
who the fuck saw The Box?
Yeah, exactly. During the week that it played in theaters, and I think
don't
it was like...
Don't jerk Ariel around. She was very nice to submit this question.
It's a great... I'm trying to give an interesting answer other than like...
I know, I keep interrupting you.
Fucking Ferris Bueller.
Oh, real quick, by the way, another reason for Ferris Bueller is because I think about like how fun it must have been to make that movie. I feel like some movies would have been a grind or a drag to make, you know?
It does seem like they had a blast making that movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus you get a little casting couch action with Sloane Peterson.
Oh, Sloane Peterson. That's how it is in Doug's pants. All right. I'm going to stop talking finish talking about The Box. Okay?
This does not answer the question. So I saw the movie in like 2009. It played for about a week, and it was one of those things where like I looked up movies, and on Friday it was going to be gone. So Thursday night, I'm like, well, fuck, I got to carve out 2 hours to go see The Box.
Right.
And I'm a fan of Donnie Darko, and I'm a big fan of Southland Tales, and I know that the movie is a mess. That doesn't even quite encapsulate what that movie is. Like, it is a mess on another level. But I love it. I genuinely love it. And so Richard Kelly kind of gets a third at bat, and a studio finances another movie for him, crazily enough. And so he does this adaptation of Button Button. I've never revisited the movie, right? So I don't know if any of it works. I saw it thinking that I generally liked it, and it's a mess in the way that Southland Tales is a mess. And when I saw it, I felt like if somebody hired me to make movies, they would turn out like Richard Kelly movies, because I would have these ideas but not really know how to communicate them or how to make them work on screen. So there's all this weird ambitiousness, and I respond to a lot of it because, I mean, he's a good director in terms of, like, he knows how to compose a shot. He knows how to put a scene together. He's just a crazy writer whose reach exceeds his grasp. And so I saw The Box and felt like, I'll bet if I ever made a movie, it would be like The Box.
That is probably the most interesting, honest answer I've heard on any podcast ever. Shut it down.
And guess what?
Shut it down.
Sales for the box are going to go through the roof on Amazon for this week only, as all of our listeners say, I should check out this fucking movie.
Dude, I've never seen the box, and I swear to God, I'll probably watch the box tonight.
It has a cool score by the people from Arcade Fire. The box is only slightly more insane than Free Birds.
I want to say something really quickly about Richard Kelly also. It's been noted several times by Mr. Bromley that Richard Kelly, we're fans.
I know what you're going to say.
F This Movie is a fan of Mr. Richard Kelly. I believe Mr. Richard Kelly, this is going back probably to 2010 or 2011. We tweeted something to Mr. Richard Kelly and said, hey, I forget specifically what the tweet was, but we probably talked about Southland Tales and probably talked about the ambitious failure. And I think, and this is just Doug's interpretation, the combination of the name of our site, F This Movie, which maybe has a negative connotation if you're not familiar with the fact that we're movie love for movie lovers, and the fact that we might have referred to one of his movies as an ambitious failure, made Mr. Richard Kelly, again, a person who we respect and admire and probably is Patrick's one of his favorite interesting kind of directors, Mr. Richard Kelly has blocked us on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart. So if anyone out there knows Mr. Richard Kelly and or follows Mr. Richard Kelly, please impart a message to him to say, listen, we love you, and please, we want to follow you. We want to know what's going on in your life. And if you listen to the show, we will fillet you metaphorically, maybe a little literally. You know. But if anyone knows him or even is following him, just like send them a direct message and say, dude, F This Movie, they're like your biggest fans. And we probably are, for real. So that's my little treatise.
All right, that was good. Only a small handful of people had blocked us.
yeah, that's true.
You know who else has, I want to say, Dan Fogler? Guess what? He does a voice in Freebird.
Wait, Dan fucking Fogler, the guy from Knights of Badass? Is he Knights of Badassdom, or no? What am I thinking
of? No, he's not in Knights of Badassdom.
Okay, why would he have blocked us?
Because I think you, for watching trailers, I think you might have written up a movie that he's in or even wrote, or he had something to do with creatively, and I think he blocked us.
Dude, the Fogler, listen, it's Doug.
Take Me Home Tonight, right? Isn't that?
Yes, that's what, yeah.
That's
yeah,
what you I, came up with when you thought of.
Fogler, I listen, it's all, it's a goof. It's just a goof.
All right.
Don't block us, you know, that's not, I want to say also, I one time, same thing with trailers, I wrote something really negatively about a Jake Johnson movie, and I tweeted it to him, which was a dumb move, and he retweeted it, and I'm like, oh, that's awkward. And then I looked later, I think he had unretweeted it, and that was the first time a tweet was taken back. But I don't think he blocked us, because I don't think we were following him, even though I like Jake Johnson. I think he's a great Chicago actor.
He's good, and he's been given a lot of love on our site, so that's good.
Yeah.
Last question from our friend at Dr. David Banner, Josh Perlman. He writes...
His last name is Josh Perlman, or his last name is Perlman?
Yeah.
Any relation to the Beast?
So, here's the question. I don't know if this is just directed to me, but I'm going to pose it to you. It says, of your various co-hosts, that's why I think it might be directed more at me, but of the various co-hosts, see how I changed it to
who's your favorite co-host? Just say my
here
name.
It is. Of the various co-hosts, whose opinions on movies do you trust the most / least? Parenthetical, this is not meant to start a civil war.
Oh, it's gonna.
And to you, Josh, I say too late, brother against brother in the great F-This Movie battle of 2014.
Good gravy.
Black Friday has a whole new meaning.
You can probably, I mean,
I can't answer this question at all.
I will answer it.
I'll let you answer it in a second. I will answer, and I'm not, I swear on Freebirds that I am not trying to take the coward's way out. There truly is not anyone who's, at least that's on the site, whose opinions I trust the most or the least.
What?
Because I think...
What?
No, that's true. Because I think if anyone of the gang... on the site were to say to me, like, emphatically, hey, I really loved this movie and you should check it out, I would absolutely do it. There's nobody where I would say, like, really? Because I don't know about you. Now, having said that, I have different taste from some people on the site. I mean, that's no secret. There are people like a lot of movies that I don't love. I love a lot of, I just said I was a fan of The Box. Like, I have liked a lot of movies that other people say, what the fuck is wrong with you? So I recognize that my taste isn't the same as everyone on the site, but that's what I love, you know? Like, I'm so glad that it's not just seven or eight of us championing the exact same movies in the exact same way. Adam Riske, who is a great person and one of my, you know, closest friends.
No, you can't choose Adam. I want to choose Adam.
Well, I'm going to say something different about him, probably. You know, we disagree on a lot of movies. Like, he likes crazy things sometimes, or he thinks I like crazy movies sometimes. But I love that. And before he was a writer on our site, he was commenting, and we would talk sometimes over email or whatever. And one of the things that made me want to ask him to write for the site was that I thought he had interesting, different opinions, that he saw things in movies that I didn't, that he liked movies that I didn't, but was able to sort of explain why. And I like that. I'm not interested in just having a single voice. But there's no one whose opinion I trust the most or the least. Having said all of that, the person whose opinion I trust the most is Doug.
Yeah, what the fuck, dude?
Listen,
I'm literally right here. And by right here, I mean like 4,000 miles away from you. No, 2,000 miles? 3,000? Who knows?
I've never measured.
I don't think anyone's ever measured. Honestly, the distance between Chicago and Los Angeles is a mystery that is lost to the ages. No one knows how far away it is. Let's just say it's anywhere between 4 miles and 1,000,000 miles. I'm somewhere in that range away from you. I'm not right next to you, but I am like right next to you in spirit because I'm a ghost. I'm literally talking to you from the afterlife right now. Listen, my opinions are the bomb. I have the best opinions on movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You should check out Birdman. I know you hate Birdman, and I liked it, so that's obviously a sore point between the two of us.
I don't hate Birdman, everyone.
I probably respond most to your opinions, and I think that's purely a matter of, and again, there's a lot of, by the way, Patrick, just for all the listeners out there, and Patrick, don't you dare censor me. Don't you dare censor me right now.
I'm going to redact
Patrick
this.
Is so PC. He's like, everyone's great. Everyone's a unique snowflake, right? And I'm like, fuck that shit, because it's
not
true.
Gloves are off.
The gloves are off. No, I think that I probably share the most in common with your opinions because, and again, there's two reasons to this. It's a two-pronged fork, if you will, a diefecta. One is that I genuinely respect you, and I respect everyone on the site. I think that's goes without saying, and I think that is the caveat to anything we're about to say right now as we start to flame the other contributors to F This Movie. I genuinely respect your opinions. I feel like you've seen so much. You've put in the work. You have done the reading. You know of what you talk about. So that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it is that we've obviously been so super close for such a long time. We're very close friends. We share women all the time is my point. That I feel like we have just grown, our tastes have grown at a similar pace and rate, although you've definitely superseded me in all seriousness. Like, you've gone beyond me. Like, you've seen so much. Your wisdom is far surpassed mine, but I still feel like our formative years in high school, in college, as we like kind of worked through, even on a personal level, like working through relationships and jobs and family situations and all that stuff, I think that informs also the way you view art and movies. So obviously that speaks to kind of like what we share and the history that we have together. So of course our opinions are similar in that respect. That being said, you should see Birdman, and there's lots of other movies that that Patrick hates that I love. Let's not get into that right now because he's right behind you. I probably disagree most with Adam Riske's opinions on movies. And that's not to say that his opinions are invalid and or not well-researched or well-reasoned, or they don't come from a genuine place from him, and I can't speak for him. It's unfair necessarily to tear him down when he's not here to defend himself. But I do think that in terms of pure taste in our opinions on movies, I feel like I'm probably the most at odds with Adam Riske. Some of the things he loves and the things he champions, I'm very lukewarm about. I never outright hate the thing he loves. At least that's not been my experience. And some of the things he dislikes a ton, I've really, really liked. Like, I know the most obvious example is Gravity. He had genuinely dislikes that movie. Like, again, if my memory serves, he does not like that movie. I think he can appreciate certain things of it, but I think on a base level, he's like, I don't like, and I'm like, I think Gravity's great. And I've talked about this before. I acknowledge that it has some problems, and I even acknowledge some of the problems that he has with it, but I still think it works and blah, blah, blah. So my point, long story short, that's just one specific example. Adam Riske is probably the person reviews, he's full of shit is my point. He's a fucking, he's a coward. He is, he hates the color yellow. I don't know if you know this about him, which yellow is the color of the sun and that gives everything life.
But again, if anyone on the site were to really go to bat for a movie, I think any one of us would check it out. When Adam Riske is like, hey, Drinking Buddies is one of my favorite movies of the year. I think all of us, even if Drinking Buddies wasn't initially on our radar, we'll check out Drinking Buddies starring Jake Johnson.
That's a perfect example.
Who doesn't like us on Twitter? That's a perfect
example because Adam did champion that movie early on, and it's the reason I watched it. And I liked it. I like that movie a lot, actually.
Exactly. That goes back to what...
And called Death, and it's like, Adam, what are you talking about? You know?
But that goes back to this idea of, you know, we all respect each other's opinions, even if we don't.
Wait. Sure. Is there anyone that's no longer on the podcast or that doesn't listen to the podcast? Alex Lawson is such an asshole. He's so full of shit. He doesn't listen anymore, right?
I think he's listening right now. I think he's hearing what you're saying.
I mean,
but this, I think, is going to be the year that I broke as a human being, because I find myself, you know, there was a period where,
having known you for years, you broke in the 90s.
Thank you. Okay, so early 90s, I first really get into music. I stop listening to only movie soundtracks, and I start listening to, like, all kinds of music, and I'm listening to Ministry and Infectious Grooves and, like, anything that's, like, on the border of alternative. I'm listening to Pig Face and, like, shit that's heavier than I would ever be into now. And then slowly but surely, my taste kind of whittled down to just a specific style of music. And then I'm only listening to Weezer and Teenage Fan Club and those kinds of bands, right? And now I even just hate everything and I just don't listen to music. So I feel like this is what's happening now.
Fuck music. Suck my dick, tunes.
This is what's happening now this year with movies, which isn't to say that, like, oh, I don't like anything, because obviously I still want to see everything from any genre or whatever, apparently except for that new Hunger Games movie. But I'm still excited about all different kinds of movies. But we have, in just a few weeks, you will be out in Chicago, and we're going to get together and do our top 10 show. Yes. Which I'm so happy about, because I'm so glad you're going to be here. That is one of my... that might be my favorite show to record all year. You, me, and JB have done that for the last several years, and I'm super excited to do it again. I have so much fun recording that show and hearing everybody's lists. And I just love this time of year because I love people's top 10 lists. I'm fascinated by them. I have a feeling my list is going to be really weird. Like, I feel like my tastes are skewing more towards kind of genre movies, Starry Eyes and The Guest and those kinds of movies, instead of some of the bigger Bergman's
important movies
and
right?
Foxcatcher, which isn't to say those movies aren't good, you know, but the movies that I find myself really thinking about, really seeking out, really getting excited to talk about and share are much more kind of like genre movies. And I don't want to get so narrow, because then I worry that, like, I won't be able to... this sounds weird, so I'll backtrack immediately. Service the readers. Like, I don't want to only write... I don't want the site to become this thing where I only write about the things that interest me, and then it just becomes yet another kind of genre blog that's only about horror and sci-fi, even though those are the things that I'm excited about. So I want to still be able to talk about all different kinds of movies. I find myself kind of going down that rabbit hole, but also wishing that I wasn't.
I keep hearing, like, I'm going down and I'm servicing the readers. And I want to, like...
Then you took away everything I wanted you to take away.
Suck.
Then I'm glad I just gave that very revealing, very personal soul, speech. Right. Yeah.
And it's very oral. That was a cry. I mean, I heard it, is my point.
That was a cry for help on the podcast. And you turned it into a blowjob joke, so that's fine.
Listen. Is Alex listening right now is my question to you right now. I'm just curious. It's funny because we don't... Like, I do think sometimes top 10 lists, top 5 lists, best of lists are kind of, you know, sometimes they're a little, like, reductive. It's almost like giving a movie 4 stars. It's like sometimes you can't quantify these sorts of things. But it's funny because I so agree with you that come December, late December, early January, I'm so interested in, like, people's movies and or people's top 10 lists. Or best of the year lists. And it also, in a weird way, too, I get just as angry sometimes when I read, like, very pretentious blogs and websites that put out movies that no one's seen and kind of, like, or that they put out their 10 worst lists. And I know we've done, you and JB specifically have done that, where you talk about the overrated, underrated, right? Or is that the summer thing? Am I thinking
No, yeah, we do
thing?
That. We do that at the end of the year.
And then do you do like a worst of the year list?
Overrated, underrated, and the ugly. That's what the show is called.
So there's no separate...
But I'm less and less interested in
right. And
calling
I think
something the worst.
And it never fails. Not only that, like, the worst lists are just kind of easy and cheap and clickbait and whatever else, but it never fails. I feel like there's always some website that I might even respect that puts a movie on there just as, like, a talking point or just like, I bet you didn't think I'd do this. Boom. It's like, oh, the comments blow up and how dare you do this, blah, blah, blah. And it's just always kind of like, oh, that just seems like it's not interested in having a discussion. It's more interested in having, and I'm sure they would make the argument that, no, this is supposed to have a discussion, but it just seems so kind of nihilistic and I don't know, like, oh, we're just gonna like rip on this. What was the one? There's a great perfect example. I know you can think of it because my brain isn't working right now. There's a movie that's like not a by any means a bad movie that someone was like the worst movie of the year or of all time. What am I thinking of right now?
Recently, yeah, somebody called The Counselor the worst movie ever made.
Yes, and it's such a weird kind of like The Counselor. Have you seen I know you've seen it. I'm asking the listeners. Have you seen The Counselor? The Counselor is a fascinating movie. A lot of it doesn't work. Some of it does, and some of it's pretty interesting, and some of it's not. So it's a mess. It's a giant mess of a movie. But to call it like the worst, it's like I don't even understand the terms of the you know, like this conversation that we're supposed to be having. You know?
Yeah, that writer was Andrew O'Hare at Salon.com.
Well, Salon is shit anyway.
Called it the worst movie ever made. And this is probably like getting a little bit too behind the curtain, too navel-gazing, especially for the end of the podcast. But maybe if you've been with us long enough, you'll find this kind of shit interesting. I don't know. I think part of it has to do with the fact that now we do have a site and we do have a podcast and there is an audience of people that are interested in talking about this stuff with us, because I used to make my own top 10 lists. I probably around the mid 90s, like 95, 96, I started to make my own top 10, and I've done one every year since then. If I were to go back and read some of those old ones, I would cringe. In part because, you know, movies affect us at the time that they affect us. So I may have seen something in December of 1998 that really rocked me that then Affliction that I've never wanted to go back and see again, you know? And so at the time it was like, yeah, okay, this is working for me now. So trying to document something for all time based on like a feeling that you're having in the moment becomes problematic, but also because I think I was a little bit of a victim to putting some titles on those lists, because I was the only one seeing them. I mean, I wasn't publishing these anywhere. Nobody was looking at my list. I'm guessing I put some titles on there of movies that I thought I should love. Like, I talked myself into loving, you know, Foxcatcher or whatever, because I felt like it was getting really good reviews and critics were loving it and they were calling it one of the 10 best of the year, and it was December and I needed a number 7, and so I'm like, yeah, Foxcatcher goes on the list. And I think
should I bump Warhorse or should I keep Warhorse?
I think
that's a dick move by me, sorry.
No, it's fine. I I've never wanted to go back and watch Warhorse. That speaks exactly to what we're talking about, is like I saw it and was very moved by the filmmaker. filmmaking, not so much the story. I thought it was such a well-made...
You also love horses.
Well, yes. I thought it was such a well-made movie that I was really responding to that. And, you know, if I had to do over again, yeah, War Horse probably doesn't make the list. But I think by virtue of the fact that now we have an audience, I'm much more conscious of, like, trying to, as douchey as this sounds, and I apologize, and I promise we're going to wrap up right after this, because I have to take all of the baths, like, kind of be more true to myself, and just say, like, no, here's what I genuinely loved this year, because nobody gets anything out of me putting Foxcatcher at number 7, because, like, I think that it makes me seem smarter, which, by the way, isn't to say that anyone who puts Foxcatcher on this list is just trying to sound smarter. That is not at all what I'm implying. I'm saying if I were to do it, it would be disingenuous.
I think that, again, this might sound douchey. I am the king douche of at this movie, so it's okay if I say
KD in the house.
KD. I think that we always try to pick stuff that's true. Oh my god, that sounds so douchey. That's true. I always try to pick stuff that's true to me. No, I think that, you know, going back this will be the fifth year we've done a top 10 or a best of the year show.
Yeah.
You, me, and JB, we've done best of the year shows for this will be the fifth year. We've always tried to do lists that are true to us and that we really respond to and we can defend, and we understand that they're not perfect lists. But yeah, it's totally the case. So many people out there, other websites, other respected film critics, I think, put down the stuff that they feel like should go on the list. And honestly, no one's ever going to argue with that kind of list.
But those might be the movies that they genuinely love, you know?
I agree.
Getting good reviews because people like them.
But hear me out, and I think that you know where I'm going, or you know where I'm coming. You know, you both know where I'm coming from, and you know where I'm going. That I think that there's a certain kind of list that's endemic, especially among people, maybe like younger writers or people that, you know, maybe subscribe to the same thing that you subscribed to back in the 90s. Like, I feel like I should watch these movies, or I feel like I should put these certain movies on my list, where the whole list is just filled with sort of that sort of movie. And that's fine. Again, those movies aren't bad. I don't think there's one bad movie in the bunch, but it feels to me like this manufactured, like this is an algorithm that Rotten Tomatoes put together of the best movies of the year. And I feel like whenever we do it, I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's always kind of like movies that we respond to. I put like some really garbage movies in other people's opinions on my top 10 lists in the past, but it's movies that I responded to and really, really enjoyed and tried to kind of, I put them on because I tried to say something about them, and this is why it was important to me at that specific moment. That being said, I feel bad. I remember last year's list, I missed a couple movies. And I've since, like, in my own head, again, this is not for public consumption, I've revised my top 10 list even from last year because I hadn't yet seen Her.
None of us had seen Her at that point. Right. Yeah.
And Her is definitely, I really, really enjoyed that movie. I responded to it. I hadn't yet seen About Time, which, sure, it's saccharine and it's definitely not a perfect movie, which is an expression I hate to say, because it's so douchey, but it's a movie I respond to. In fact, I just watched it for the second time with my wife, and it gets you. If you haven't seen it yet, Patrick, and I don't think you have.
I haven't.
You should see About Time, because it's a really, for me, and maybe it speaks to parenting, it speaks to relationships, it speaks to father-son relationships. It is moving, and I was moved.
Just so I'm clear, this is the movie where time is currency?
No, that's where we're talking to Johnny. But yeah, I feel like, you know, if nothing else, we're all trying, and that's the great thing. And I'm going to turn this around a little bit. And I feel like every person that's been a friend of the site, has kind of taken that sort of, lead also and say, like, you know, I'm going to make this is my favorite movies of the year. They're not like maybe they're not the best in quotes, whatever the best may be, whoever defines that bullshit, but it's my favorite. And this is, I could defend these, and this really spoke to me. I think rarely of our community, it's such a positive place with great people that say great things. And I really, really love it. I love to read all the comments. They put together some awesome lists. And if nothing else, just like with Scary Movie Month and the Scary Movie Challenge, or with Junesploitation, it makes me want to see 50 more things.
Yeah, right. Yeah. favorite will always be more interesting to me than best, because best doesn't tell me anything except what somebody thinks, you know, should be the objective best. Whereas favorite tells me something about you as a person, which I'm much more interested in learning, you know.
Well, what's the best? Citizen Kane, Vertigo? Yeah, they are the best. I mean, you can't, it's like, it's, and, but like, what's your favorite? Oh, Starship fucking Troopers is my favorite.
Starship Troopers 3 though, right? Marauder?
Actually, no, it's the cartoon series.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Anyway, so we will wrap up.
Rico's rough next.
We're going to stop now. Thank you guys very much for listening. This was kind of a weird episode, but hopefully you enjoyed it, especially if you've been a fan of us to this point. If this is your first episode, I urge you to check out some of the other more traditional shows where we just talk about a single movie. Make sure you join us next week. We have a special show. I'm going to be joined by Mike White from the Projection Booth podcast, and we're going to talk about RoboCop 2. So I'm excited for you guys all to hear that. Douglas, thank you very much for talking about all this stuff with me.
Thank you very much, and happy Thanksgiving to all the F-heads out there.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Thank you, those of you who submitted those questions. You guys are great. Everyone, have a great holiday, and we will talk to you next week.
Alex isn't like, he doesn't listen, right? He kind of listens, but not listens, right?